You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production in association with City News.
It's a terrifying trend taking place across the country, and the latest data shows 10 provinces and territories have seen an increase in the toxicity of illicit drugs, and it's killing an average of 17 Canadians a day.
This was already, obviously, a crisis. An epidemic we are not prepared to tackle. It's killing people by the thousands. The last thing we needed was a way to make it worse. Recently, though, there is evidence of a new form of fentanyl, cut with something else, making its way across Canada from west to east. It's more dangerous, more addictive, and it leaves its users so comatose that it's earned the nickname robbery dope for how vulnerable it makes them to theft or worse. What do we know about it? Where did it come from? How should our approach to the overdose crisis change in light of an even more dangerous type of dope? And will we really change our approach in light of this? Because so far, we haven't shown ourselves willing to make that commitment. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Manisha Krishnan is a senior editor and a reporter with Vice News. She has covered the overdose crisis for some time now. Hi, Manisha.
Hi, Jordan.
Can you start by telling me what the first thing was that tipped people off that there was a new kind of opioid circulating?
Yeah, so basically what happened was there was an overdose prevention site, which is also, you know, a safe injection site, essentially, in Vancouver, where they had a cluster of 30 atypical overdoses in a couple of weeks in Vancouver in April of 2019. And so basically that means that drug users were not responding to naloxone when they were ODing. And so a couple months later, Vancouver Coastal Health, which is the health authority there, alerted the public about benzodiazepines being found in the fentanyl supply.
So what's the difference between an opioid cut with benzos and normal opioids?
Well, I mean, you know, fentanyl, they're two completely different families of drugs. And so you can have an opioid addiction and a benzo addiction is sort of completely separate from that. So I think that, you know, part of the problem is that there's people who have an opioid addiction who are seeking out fentanyl, and then they're inadvertently getting addicted or gaining a dependency on benzos. And benzos are, you know, essentially they're sedatives. Like the most famous ones are Valium, Xanax. And so that's not what's in this illicit supply, though. It's often a lot stronger than that. And so it can really knock you out. And it can sort of increase the chances of an overdose because it can depress the respiratory system.
You talked to a bunch of users who have had inadvertently some of these new drugs. How do they describe it?
Yeah, so some of the stuff that I heard was pretty disturbing. There were people who described passing out, you know, for 48 hours, waking up behind the wheel of their car in like an underground parking garage, not knowing how they got there, you know, essentially like driving asleep. This benzo dope, it's also described as robbery dope because people will do it and then they'll sort of pass out and, you know, they'll get robbed for their drugs or their money. I've also heard of people who sort of will do a hit of this and they'll fall asleep, you know, bent over, sort of crumpled over for hours and then wake up, do it again to the point where now they actually are kind of permanently in a bent over position because of how long they spend, which is just a really disturbing image if you think about that.
Yeah. Do we know yet how prevalent this type of dope is becoming?
We know that it's definitely becoming a lot more prevalent in BC. So, you know, the BC Center on Substance Use said that of the drug samples, of the opioid samples they tested between April and November of this year, 21% tested positive for benzos. And then as far as the samples taken from fatal overdoses in BC, from July of 2020 to September of this year, 43% of those samples contained at least one benzo. And then we also know that this is starting to happen more in Toronto too, as well as parts of the US.
So it is then spreading across Canada, and it seems to be coming from BC, or do we not know that either?
That I do not know. And there's sort of different varieties of stuff that's being found, but definitely it is becoming more and more prevalent in BC. And in Philadelphia, for example, there's this drug that is essentially, it's an animal tranquilizer that is being found in the opioid supply. And now that is being found in 1 in 3 fatal opioid overdose deaths. So that's a lot.
Yeah. Can I ask a really dumb question, or maybe just a really practical question? Like, how is this done? How does the benzo get into the fentanyl?
Well, that's a tough question for me to answer, because I'm sure that there's like lots of different methodologies. But basically, you know, I've seen a dealer cut raw fentanyl, like cut buffers into it. And so the dealer that I saw, they just used a coffee grinder.
Wow.
Yeah. So I have no idea how it's being done, or, you know, if it's being done on a mass scale or whatever. But I'm sure there's like various methodologies. I'm sure not all of it is like super scientific.
One more really dumb question. Why would dealers want to add this stuff to opioids if the results are so horrifying? Presumably even the worst drug dealer wants a live client above a dead one.
No, that's not a dumb question at all, Jordan. I mean, that's the question that I think all of us want to know. And it's a really hard question to answer. I don't have the answers, even though I report on this stuff and experts that I talk to. All we can kind of do is speculate. So some of the reasons that I've heard is, so fentanyl can wear off pretty fast. Mm. And so benzos can potentially like make the fentanyl effect kind of last longer, is one thing that I've heard. You know, another thing is just the supply chain is really messed up.
Like, right.
We've seen it in everything due to the pandemic, and drugs are not immune from that. So it's possible that that's why we're seeing more of these kind of novel substances get cut into the drug supply. It could be sort of people who are just, I don't know, amateur hour doing this. And then, you know, it also could be just trying to get ahead of the schedule of controlled substances. And so sometimes that's why these novel substances, these novel designer drugs, if you will, are being created. It's because they're not technically federally banned.
Huh.
And so that could be another thing. But, you know, the other thing to keep in mind is, in some of these situations, the supply actually can drive the demand. So once you have something that's cut into the drug supply, and then you have people who get hooked on it, then they begin to request that,
right,
and demand it.
Right.
And so you've created the demand by contaminating the drug supply.
I'm probably asking you to explain the last few years of your beat here, but how did we end up here from, you know, old-fashioned heroin?
Oh, yeah. The good old days of heroin. I mean,
well, I'm not trying to be funny, but I mean, like, every time we do a story on this, there's something more dangerous and potent out there. And at this point, it feels like the drug that was like totally taboo during my teen years is like the safe one now on the market.
Yeah, I know. And it's wild to think about that. I mean, I did a story about sort of this heroin nostalgia phenomenon, because a lot of the drug users, a lot of the opioid users now are nostalgic for that old school heroin, because you can't find it anymore. But I think essentially there's a few different things happening. You know, most of the heroin supply in the world comes from Afghanistan.
Right.
We don't have like a land bridge to Afghanistan, so it's kind of harder to get it here. And so I think that, and I believe a lot of the heroin from the US actually comes through Mexico anyway. But fentanyl is easier to make. It's cheaper. And you kind of get a lot more bang for your buck. And so because less of it is, you know, will get you high, like it's much more potent than heroin. It's like up to 50 times more potent than heroin. And so I think that is really, you know, a big reason why North America in particular is flooded with fentanyl. And then, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of things happening with, you know, like a lot of the drugs that we're now seeing are completely man-made.
Right.
And a lot of these, yeah, so a lot of these suppliers, they're trying to keep ahead. They're trying to evade the banned substances so they can just keep tweaking the chemical compounds of these drugs to make drugs that are similar, have a similar effect, but are, you know, molecularly slightly different. And so the possibilities for that are really endless. And that is what's truly terrifying about this. It's really like a genie that is not going to go back in the bottle.
How are these developments, and I guess maybe the benzos and fentanyl in particular, but also all the other man-made adaptations, how are they changing what was already a big crisis a couple of years ago?
Yeah, so I mean, like the overdoses from benzos can last a lot longer. So typically when you revive somebody with Narcan, if they're having an opioid overdose, they'll come back within a couple of minutes. But with benzos, they might be out for like the entire day. So that's just an added stressor on, you know, sort of our frontline harm reduction workers, you know, who now are monitoring people for an entire day, maybe at some of these overdose prevention sites. It's also leaves people more vulnerable, as I mentioned earlier, to robbery, to sexual assault. And then, you know, in terms of you're basically, there's people who are now going to be addicted to benzos when they maybe didn't even have an intention of doing benzos. You know, they didn't want that. And now they have this additional dependency to cope with, which can be a really rough dependency. Like a benzo dependency is no joke. So it's bad in a lot of different ways.
Do first responders and advocates and people who work with users, do they kind of, given all the changes to all the drugs that you've just described, have they kind of developed a blueprint yet for what happens when one traditional drug starts being made a new way or cut with something new? I'm kind of thinking here, to reach for a probably a bad analogy, about how we adjust our pandemic responses to new variants. And I wonder if there needs to be that kind of blueprint in the community that works with drug users.
So like during the pandemic, because of all the stay home, you know, orders and advice like that, a lot of people stopped using safe drug consumption sites. A lot of people were using alone. And so that's partially why we saw us, why we've seen a spike in overdoses. So I think like using with someone, having someone around who knows how to use naloxone, basically, getting your drugs tested if possible. But unfortunately, you know, some of these benzos won't necessarily even show up. Like some of these substances won't necessarily even show up on testing strips. So that's another issue. So yeah, I don't know if there is really a blueprint, to be honest. It's a pretty big concern.
In terms of primary care, you mentioned at the beginning that some of these overdoses don't respond to naloxone. Is there something they respond to? Do we have something that can help people who are overdosing this way?
There is a drug that you can use to reverse a benzo overdose, but it's not recommended. Like most people don't use it because it can actually trigger seizures. So from my understanding, you would still use naloxone to reverse the opioid element of the overdose. And then you would just sort of make sure that the person has oxygen and just monitor them, which is, I think, normal protocol for ODs.
And what about the detoxing? Is it possible? I mean, I guess it's possible, but you mentioned benzo dependency can be rough as well. You know, how do you detox if somebody tries to do that from normal fentanyl or opioids and benzos at the same time?
Yeah. So from my understanding, benzo detoxes can be really rough. They can even be life-threatening. I've heard people compare them to alcohol detox, which is one of the sort of the most notorious detoxes. So, you know, people can get seizures, be nauseated, and it can take a long time. Like it can take like weeks to detox. And my understanding that is that opioid detoxes, you can sort of get through them a lot quicker. So it does sound very unpleasant and like it would be potentially pretty rough on the body.
When we talk about programs and government help and intervention and all this kind of stuff, what do you hear from users and from the advocates who work closely with them about what would really counter this crisis? And I guess what I'm getting at here is, if this kind of new dope is going to keep showing up, at some point, is it better to just make the safe dope ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head there. I think that's really what I'm hearing, is that we need to give people a safe supply of drugs, such as medical grade good heroin. And, you know, it's really getting to a critical point right now, because once people are really hooked on something like fentanyl, it's hard for them to even go back to heroin because they are addicted to something. They have such a much higher tolerance. So the window even for doing that is closing. And that's also a pretty scary thought.
Is that proposal gaining momentum anywhere outside of the community who engages with drug users? I know in Toronto recently, a proposal was put forward to decriminalize all drugs. That still seems to me a long way from providing safe supply.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as I know, right now, Vancouver has one clinic where they give prescription heroin, and there's like 130 people or something like that doing it or in that program. And then I think in Nova Scotia, they might be doing these opioid vending machines, like hydromorphone, which is a heroin substitute. But no, it's not gaining a ton of traction, because I think it's politically pretty unsavory. I mean, to have the government paying for heroin, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really just like a desperate attempt to stop people from dying. Like it's really the last ditch effort. Decrim is good, but the situation is very extreme and decrim is not going to solve the problem.
As it continues to get more extreme, and I think anybody paying attention to your work or even listening to the occasional episode of this podcast knows how quickly the overdose numbers have been increasing over the past couple of years. Is there ever a tipping point at which that political calculation changes? I know right now, and this is obviously not appropriate, but a lot of people in power see users who are on the street as more disposable. But as we start seeing this get into homes and schools and places like that, like, is it bad enough to make people reconsider?
I mean, I certainly think there's, you know, markers of progress, like the fact that BC and Vancouver and now Toronto and I think Montreal they're all sort of requesting decriminalization. We're starting to see even police say that, yeah, like enforcement is not really working in an effective way. But I really do think we would need kind of a rapid scaling up of safe supply. And so far, I haven't seen much sort of going in that direction right now. So it is definitely easier to, I think, brush drug users under the rug because they are an incredibly marginalized population.
As you look towards next year, is this a pattern that's going to continue to escalate?
I am definitely going to be looking into that. I'm very sort of interested in this sort of continued adulteration of the drug market, and I'm definitely going to be reporting on it. So stay tuned for that.
Manisha, thank you so much for this, as always.
Thanks, Jordan.
Manisha Krishnan from Vice News. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN.
Talk to us anytime via email, thebigstorypodcast, that's all one word, all lowercase, at rci.rogers.com. And listen to this podcast in any podcast player you prefer, or tell your smart speaker to play The Big Story Podcast. Stephanie Phillips is the lead producer of this show. Joseph Fish and Braden Alexander are our associate producers. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Have a safe weekend, and we'll talk on Monday.